Good evening and welcome to the KRFP Evening Report for Thursday, December 11th, 2025. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Flooding in western Washington, town of Sumas near Canadian border evacuated. U.S. Senator Patty Murray reacts to ICE police dog mauling of a person who was not resisting or fleeing in Vancouver. ICE drove over the legs of a detained man also in Vancouver. Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris bans Coeur d'Alene Police Chief Lee White and Rathdrum Police Chief Dan Haley from conducting law enforcement outside the city limits in apparent retaliation against investigations of the sheriff for violating the free speech rights of a Democrat who attended a legislative town hall put on by right-wing Republicans. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. The small western Washington town of Sumas near the Canadian border has been evacuated due to serious flooding. The Nooksack River overflowed its banks this morning and has flooded downtown Sumas. A Washington Transportation Department mounted camera shows floodwaters halfway to the top of the first floor of at least two buildings downtown. There are level 3 go-now evacuations in Skagit and Snohomish counties, and several highways are closed due to mudslides. There are also level 3 evacuation orders in areas near Sumner and Puyallup. Officials say the city of Duval is cut off by floodwaters. King County Executive Gourmet Zahile issued an emergency order late this afternoon, which directs the closure of all public spaces and buildings and other actions necessary to prevent loss of life, injury, or property damage. Rescuers evacuated 16 people, including 8 children, who were trapped by floodwaters from the Snohomish River. As the atmospheric river moves southward, officials expect more flooding in western Washington. U.S. Highway 2 over Stevens Pass is closed between Index and Leavenworth. U.S. Highway 97 over Blewett Pass was closed for a time but has reopened. Several other highways in western Washington are closed. From this earlier story, Washington Governor Bob Ferguson yesterday declared a state of emergency and he activated the National Guard due to the major flooding across the state. Much of the flooding so far has been in the western part of the state, but forecasters say eastern Washington could have heavy rainfall in the coming days. According to Portland television station KOIN, Governor Ferguson said yesterday, "I have declared a statewide emergency and I will be requesting an expedited emergency declaration from the federal government today. We need the federal government to grant that request. This situation is extremely serious. The next few days are critical. I want to encourage all Washingtonians to listen carefully to alerts from your county and emergency management departments. If you receive an evacuation order, please follow that order. It's critical to your safety." The emergency declaration would normally unlock federal disaster relief funds, but Ferguson is dealing with the Trump administration now, which has refused in the past to allocate emergency funds to Democratic-leaning jurisdictions in emergencies since becoming president again this year. The National Weather Service says more rain is on the way. The agency has issued weather alerts for the Northern Cascades and the Puget Sound areas, saying there could be record-breaking floods in the coming days. The office of Democratic U.S. Senator Maria Cantwell says people in Burlington, Mount Vernon, Cedro Woolley, Lyman, Concrete, and Hamilton, all in Skagit County, might have to evacuate in coming days. Yesterday afternoon, officials issued a Level 3 go-now order for residents of Orting along the Puyallup River due to flooding there. The National Weather Service is warning the lower Yakima River and the Columbia River may flood. They are also warning of possibly record-breaking flooding, or what they call locally catastrophic flooding, along the Skagit and Snohomish Rivers today. Democratic U.S. Senator Patty Murray of Washington has condemned the Trump administration for the recent dog attack on a Washington resident by ICE. Senator Murray said the police dog attack occurred November 14th when ICE agents lured Wilmer Toledo Martinez of Vancouver out of his home and then sicked the dog on him, even though he was not resisting or attempting to flee. Toledo Martinez's U.S. citizen wife and his two children, who are 2 and 3 years old, witnessed the attack along with friends and neighbors. According to Portland television station KATU, neighbor John Williams Sr. said they sicked the dog on him, had him on the ground, hitting him. The Department of Homeland Security released a statement Tuesday which said CBP agents arrested Wilmer Toledo Martinez, an illegal alien who has prior arrests for being in possession of a loaded firearm. Martinez resisted arrest and attempted to flee. He was safely taken down by a designated patrol canine. After being taken into custody, he was provided medical attention. Martinez will remain in Department of Homeland Security custody pending his removal proceedings. CBP is unapologetic in the mission to secure our nation's communities and remove the worst of the worst. Senator Murray responded that she knows the agency is lying because there were witnesses to the attack and noted Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem has no credibility. Murray also said Wilmer does not have any criminal convictions but instead has an outstanding charge from 2018. Senator Murray wrote on social media, "An outstanding charge from 2018 is not a conviction, nor is it a reason to maul an innocent young father. This response from DHS is fundamentally sick and wrong. As Wilmer has explained consistently, he did not resist arrest or attempt to flee. There were other witnesses, and I will believe my own constituents over miserable propagandists who have proven over and over again they will lie shamelessly. DHS has no credibility under Kristi Noem's leadership. What happened to Wilmer was wrong and inhumane. I strongly reiterate my call for his immediate release so he can receive the medical care he needs. Wilmer's family has let me know that his arm is numb, his vision has been blurry, he's having trouble breathing and experiencing pain where he was bitten. And for days now, ICE will not let him see a doctor and are callously dismissing his concerns. DHS officials should not assume there will never be accountability for this kind of depraved violence and inhumane treatment of human beings. Trump is not going after violent criminals or the worst of the worst. He is terrorizing everyone, including U.S. citizens and their loved ones. I do not want to live in an America where federal agents can sic attack dogs on peaceful residents with impunity and face no consequences." Toledo Martinez's attorney, Pierce Stevens, said in a YouTube interview with Don Lemon that federal agents lied to his client and, quote, lured him outside and then sicked a dog on him for no reason. When Toledo Martinez's wife asked if they would take her husband to the hospital, they said he would be taken for medical attention at an ICE facility in Portland. Senator Murray and Stevens said Homeland Security agents denied Toledo Martinez medical care for hours after the dog mauled him, but eventually took him to a hospital to get stitches and medication. He has been incarcerated at the ICE Detention Center in Tacoma for nearly a month now. Toledo Martinez's parents brought him to the U.S. when he was 15 years old. And he married a U.S. citizen and has 3 U.S.-born children who are citizens. Senator Murray said about the incident, "Every one of us must speak out against these kinds of human rights abuses." Meanwhile, Democratic U.S. Representative Pramila Jayapal of Washington said yesterday in a social media post, "I've been notified of 2 more deaths in ICE custody in the last 24 hours, meaning that 25 people have now died in detention since Trump returned to office. That's the most in more than 2 decades. The cruelty and inhumanity of this administration must end." Witness accounts and videos show an ICE vehicle ran over a leg of a man who was detained in Vancouver last week. According to the Columbian newspaper, the videos show a U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement SUV running over the man at El Antojo restaurant at 2505 East 4th Plain Boulevard in Vancouver. The video shows Jose Paniagua Calderon screaming in pain when a silver Ford SUV drove over his right leg as ICE agents detained him. One of the witnesses was Derek Bowe, who said he exited a neighboring restaurant and he saw and heard the man screaming in pain. Bo said, "You can just hear the guy screaming, and it sounded like he was either distraught or in extreme pain. It was just a horrible-sounding scream. The front vehicle that broke his legs had already drove off. I got out and was trying to get the guys to identify themselves, and they were really smug about it. I didn't realize they had drove over his legs at that time." A Vancouver police report said, based on the information regarding a vehicle that is alleged to have struck a person within the city limits of Vancouver, per our policy, the Vancouver Police Department will be conducting a traffic investigation to determine the facts. A family member has set up a GoFundMe account, which has already raised $4,500 to help Calderone. And you're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.
Washington State is entering the new year with an estimated revenue shortfall of $11 billion. In response, advocates for working families are urging the state to generate new revenue by raising taxes on its wealthiest residents. Research shows Washington has the second most regressive tax system in the country, with low and middle income residents paying upwards of 14% of their income to taxes, while the wealthiest pay just 4%. Emily Vananek with the Washington State Budget and Policy Center says the state needs a more progressive tax system, explaining it's not about politics, rather it's an attempt to rebalance the scales.
Washington already gives preferential treatment to wealthy people and wealthy corporations, and that was doubled down on at the federal level. And so how do we pay for the services and programs that people use as lifelines, frankly, when we're asking people with the least to pay the most?
Critics argue that progressive taxes drive away wealth, but Vananek says that is not true, noting that Boeing moved more than 1,000 jobs out of the state after receiving one of the largest tax breaks in U.S. history. H.R. 1, which passed this summer, severely cut essential programs such as Medicaid and SNAP while giving large tax cuts to the wealthy. The richest 1% in Washington will receive more than 60% of the federal tax cuts, averaging more than $103,000 a year, according to the Institute for Taxation and Economic Policy. David Henson with the nonprofit Firelands Workers Building Community Power says the state has no choice but to find a new source of revenue.
I would like to actually see a common sense approach to the funding for our taxes. We're not doing that. They make more money than we do. They should pay their fair share.
Vananek says there is progress, citing Washington's 2021 passage of the Working Families Tax Credit, as well as a capital gains tax, which taxes revenue from stocks and bonds more than $250,000 to fund education and child care. In its first few years, it has generated more than $1.2 billion. Vananek calls it a sustainable revenue source, but says more work remains.
Even though those were really big policies, they weren't moving the needle as massively as we need to if we're actually going to address affordability in our state.
Vananek explains that more than half of Washington's budget relies on the state's sales tax, which does not take the income of consumers into account. For Public News Service, I'm Isabel Charlet.
KRFP thanks its listeners and sponsors, including Tie-Dye Everything, with locally made tie-dyed items, incense, and other accessories. Tie-Dye Everything is located near 6th Street at 527 South Main Street in Moscow. For more information, you can find Tie-Dye Everything at tie-dye-everything.com.
Programming on KRFP is also sponsored by Ungadunga Brewing Company of 333 North Jackson Street in Moscow. Ungadunga features live music, special events, fine food, and craft beers at ungadungabrewing.com and on Facebook and Instagram.
Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris has banned Coeur d'Alene Police Chief Lee White, Coeur d'Alene Police Captain Dave Hagar, and Rathdrum Police Chief Dan Haley from performing law enforcement duties outside their jurisdictions in the county. Norris wrote a letter to White, Hagar, and Haley saying he was withdrawing their privileges as special deputies. Police Chief White and Police Chief Haley say the bans are retaliation for their investigations of unmarked private security workers who Norris told to drag a woman out of the Coeur d'Alene High School in February when she spoke up too much at a town hall called by far-right legislators from the Idaho Panhandle. Coeur d'Alene Police reports said Sheriff Norris was involved in the incident but did not call him a suspect. The Spokesman Review says they obtained an email White wrote to Coeur d'Alene Mayor-elect Dan Gookin and City Administrator Troy Timison. Looks like the Coeur d'Alene Police Department being the adults in the room may not satisfy Bob's latest tantrum. White noted 14 of his officers staff the Kootenai County SWAT team. He wrote, "It would be inappropriate for us to cede complete control of our SWAT officers to the Sheriff's Department without oversight or supervision from our leaders." In June, Coeur d'Alene Police responded to the fatal shooting of two firefighters on Canfield Mountain. Canfield Mountain is not in the city limits of Coeur d'Alene. Coeur d'Alene Police Chief Lee White said in February the city of Coeur d'Alene revoked the license of the Hayden-based security firm Lear Asset Management to operate within the city after three plainclothes employees of the company dragged a woman out of the Kootenai County Republican Party Central Committee Town Hall at the Coeur d'Alene High School. Former Democratic State Legislature candidate Teresa Barenpaul admitted she spoke out of turn at the meeting in mid-February, attended by 450 people. At one point, when the Republican lawmakers discussed the ending of women's reproductive rights, she yelled, "Is this a lecture or a town hall?" Kootenai County Sheriff Bob Norris reacted to that. He was in plain clothes, but wearing a cap that said Kootenai County Sheriff. He told Barenpaul to leave and attempted to physically remove her from the auditorium chair. When Norris could not get her out of the chair, he told three unidentified men to get her.
My name is Robert Norris. I'm the sheriff of this county. We're asking you to leave on video. Please get up or be escorted out.
Sheriff Norris, this gentleman is assaulting me. This man is assaulting me.
Let's go.
This man is assaulting me. Is this your deputy? Is this your deputy? No, don't touch us. Is he a deputy? These are deputies. Who the hell are these men?
You are hurting her. You're hurting her.
Just cooperate. It'll be 100 times
better. Yeah, that's what they say to rape victims. You fucking piece of shit.
According to the Idaho Press, the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office said Norris was the only member of the Sheriff's Department at the meeting. The Sheriff's Department released a statement at the time which said Barenpaul interrupted the speakers at least 7 times. She was warned at least 3 times. She was asked by Sheriff Norris to leave at least 5 times. And finally, the licensed and bonded professional security removed her from the venue. She forcibly resisted and bit one of them. She was cited by the Coeur d'Alene police for trespass and battery. Security did fully cooperate with law enforcement. Coeur d'Alene Police Chief Lee White released a statement at the time which said his officers were outside in the high school parking lot. White wrote, "Officers who were in the school parking lot due to a threat to one of the state legislators were alerted to the incident after Barenpaul had been removed. During the initial investigation, officers learned Barenpaul bit one of the men involved in removing her. With the officers' limited information at the time, Barenpaul was cited for battery. Since the initial investigation, officers and detectives have continued to investigate this incident. After reviewing all new evidence and video related to the event, the city prosecuting attorney's office has moved to dismiss the citation against Barenpaul in the interest of justice. The business license for Lear Asset Management has been revoked for violating Coeur d'Alene city ordinances regarding security agencies and agents. White had said his police force denied a request by the Kootenai County Sheriff's Department to charge Barenpaul with trespassing, saying it would be inappropriate to do that to someone who spoke out of turn or yelled at a public town hall meeting. And you're tuned into the KRFP Evening Report on KRFP Moscow Pullman. The Kootenai County Sheriff's Office says six Kootenai County jail inmates overdosed on fentanyl inside the jail last Saturday. According to the Sheriff's Office, at around 7:30 p.m. Saturday night, jail staffers saw two inmates showing signs of an overdose. Jail staff administered the overdose drug Narcan to the pair, who were revived. The staff members then said they saw other inmates who were also showing signs of overdoses and moved to administer Narcan to them. According to the spokesman review, the Coeur d'Alene Fire and Rescue responded to the jail to provide medical assistance and transported the six inmates to the Kootenai Medical Health Center for treatment. Health workers stabilized the six inmates and then returned them to the jail. Kootenai County Sheriff Lieutenant Mark Ellis said police arrested 37-year-old inmate Raymond Spezzi in the jail on a charge of possession of a controlled substance inside a correctional facility. A court had ordered Spezzi jailed for parole violations. He was convicted of charges of trafficking heroin in 2016. Ellis said it is unclear if the fentanyl was mixed with other drugs, but police sent the substances which they recovered for testing. He said it's fairly common to have drug problems at correctional facilities. Ellis pointed to the Postal Service as a drug problem for jails, saying mail is one of the hardest things to stop the drugs from flowing through right now. Ellis said jailers are waiting for a mail drug scanner that they ordered, and he said deputies searched the jail and uncovered trace amounts of fentanyl in the cells. You're tuned in to the KRFP Evening Report.
The federal government favors big agriculture when it buys food for nutrition programs in Montana and nationwide, says a new report. The advocacy group Friends of the Earth says in fiscal year 2024, the U.S. Department of Agriculture spent $4.8 billion on food for school meals, food banks, and tribal communities. Almost half of that went to just 25 companies. Walter Schweitzer is president of the Montana Farmers Union. He says these companies are looking for the lowest price possible, which hurts Montana farmers and consumers.
Big corporate monopolies that supply this food is heavily processed. It's not the same quality. And in many cases, especially with beef, it's probably a foreign product.
Tyson Foods topped the list at $240 million, or 5% of spending. The USDA announced in August that it would buy $230 million in fruits, vegetables, and fresh seafood from U.S. farmers for these programs. The plan didn't mention beef and poultry, which the report says make up a large share of these food purchases. Chloe Waterman with Friends of the Earth and co-author of the report echoes Schweitzer's sentiments. She says the USDA leaves smaller farmers using sustainable practices behind.
Some of these foods may have a low sticker price, but a high cost to communities and to public health.
Waterman notes the USDA emphasizes market fairness, but says the agency's purchases don't back that up. Schweitzer agrees and adds he wants smaller producers in Montana and across the country to get a fair deal.
Let's just put American consumers and American producers first. And make sure that they're eating good quality food produced in the United States.
I'm Laura Hatch, Big Sky Connection.
Idaho Fish and Game announced a large reward for information leading to a citation or an arrest of the person or persons responsible for a poached bighorn sheep someone killed near Riggins in November. Donations have increased the amount of the award to $12,800. The Fish and Game Department is investigating the killing of a young bighorn ram on Big Salmon Road near Partridge Creek, east of Riggins. Department investigators believe someone shot the ram between Thursday, November 20th and Saturday, November 22nd. According to the Lewiston Tribune, Idaho Wild Sheep Foundation Vice President Rich Carignan of Lewiston said people are anxious to donate to the reward fund, and he believes the reward money will continue to increase. Along with Citizens Against Poaching, the Wild Sheep Foundation began raising money for the reward effort with an initial investment of $2,700. Carignan said, "It's from our passionate members at the Idaho Wild Sheep Foundation and from private citizens stepping up. They love the bighorn sheep. They are iconic. They want to catch the people who did this. Wasting of this ram is unacceptable. State law says poaching wild sheep in Idaho is a felony and has a potential fine of $10,000. The Fish and Game Department is asking anyone who may know about the incident or has information about the poached bighorn should call Citizens Against Poaching hotline at 800-632-5999. That's 800-632-5999. Or the Fish and Game Department's Clearwater Regional Office at 208-799-5010. That's 208-799-5010. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather forecast for the Moscow-Pullman area, there is a 70% chance of rain tonight, mainly before midnight. Mostly cloudy, steady temperature around 48, up to a quarter inch of rain possible. Mostly cloudy tomorrow and tomorrow night, high 54, low 40. Mostly cloudy on Saturday, then gradually becoming sunny, high 52. Partly cloudy Saturday night and Sunday, low 36, high 49. Currently 46 degrees. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscasts you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events and the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on KRFP, be sure to become a member of KRFP. Membership's $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you can go to the KRFP website to find out more ways to help KRFP. There's a drop-down box that says Support KRFP. You can underwrite programming, which is a cost-effective way of letting our listeners know your business supports community radio. You can adopt a DJ. There's a PayPal option and a Patreon button as well. Once again, we'll gladly accept checks of any amount at KRFP, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. Flashpoints is on next. At 7:30, we'll have Appearing Locally, where we feature music from artists that are appearing in the Moscow-Pullman area in the near future. And at 8 o'clock, First Wave is on the air. Stand by for more KRFP Moscow-Pullman.